Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Caw, be good. I love you. Welcome to Ridiculous History. Thanks again for tuning in. Let's give it up for our super producer, Max Freight Train Williams.
Caw.
Caw, indeed. They call me Ben. Joined as always with the one and only Mr. Noel Brown. Noel, I got to tell you, we talked about it off air. My man, thank you so much. Personally, thank you so much for doing this episode.
Well, you're welcome. Hold on. Sorry, I just had to hear that real quick. It's a fun sound made by a tiny Japanese toy. You know, Ben, you might have noticed my lackluster caw. I'm fascinated by this topic, but I may have alluded in the past that I have a certain phobia towards avian creatures. And the big talking ones with the big thick tree trunk claws, those are the ones that pure nightmare fuel for me. Don't want them, don't need them. I'm sure they're lovely to some folks, you know, if you know, the Dr. Doolittles of the world out there, have at. Not for me. And the idea that these creatures, these parrots, you know, could in fact be intelligent enough to like swoop down and have a chat with me, extra nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'd make it better. Maybe it'd make it more, I don't know. You know, that's a good question. Well, maybe we'll discover the answer here.
Yeah, they usually, in my experience, birds of a higher intelligence often, outside of corvids, birds of a higher intelligence will often choose one pet giant, one person that is their person. I've had experiences with highly intelligent birds outside of the corvid world, both positive and negative, to be sure. And this is something that's really close to myself, to you, for some negative reasons, and, of course, to our research associate, Dr. Zach.
One night over Sleep Town, a doctor appeared, but this was no normal doctor. Who's there?
It's Zach.
Zach who?
The doctor.
Name Zach. And he's here to fill your scripts. Just for knowledge, pet is cat. Teach you history, books and stuff. Let's go with other things. Yeah, that'll work. Zach.
who earned that nickname, by the way, folks. And today we're going to talk about a creature, a bird, a gray parrot named Alex, who is often called the most intelligent avian on record. The story starts in 1977. There's this person named Irene Pepperberg. Awesome name. Irene Pepperberg is an animal psychologist and adopts a one-year-old African gray parrot named Alex. Noel, Pepperberg was a researcher at Purdue University at the time, and she was studying something that you know continually fascinates me, man. Animal cognition, right? The definition of intelligence. Does that elephant recognize itself in the mirror? Does the dolphin feel loss? Does the canine experience love, joy, jealousy, or envy, technically? These are questions that humans have grappled with forever and ever, by which I mean just the, you know, the dawn of human history. And
or at the very least, since, like, you know, the first Disney movie with anthropomorphized talking celebrity-voiced animals, you know?
Sure.
It's certainly an easy thing for the mind to do, as we as humans tend to be a little bit self-centered. We, I think, assume that all other living creatures see and experience the world in the same way that we do.
Yeah, and this is something we were talking about off air. This is one of the things that fascinates me. First off, the human fad on Earth still doesn't have a workable definition of what intelligence is, what it means. And there are a lot of assumptions throughout, you know, the majority of human history that non-human animals are less intelligent, right? And then the pendulum swung to the point where scientists were saying, hey, certain animals do seem to be quite intelligent by these various metrics we can produce. But is it the same sort of intelligence, right? What is the difference between sentience and sapience? These are the questions Pepperberg is tackling in this amazing story. Up until she partnered up with Alex the parrot, most people believe that birds were kind of dummies, you know, that they had evolutionarily sacrificed a lot of stuff for the ability to fly. And that they, you know, the idea was that, okay, look, a parrot, a minor bird, maybe a corvid, they can make noises, a starling even, can make noises that sound like they are responsive and cognizant of a conversation, but they're really just mimicking you. And that's one of the big questions about the story of Alex, the so-called most intelligent avian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we'll get into this too, but it also does bring into question the whole idea of even our intelligence. And, like, do intelligence and language necessarily mean the same thing? Like, we learn language through mimicry as well, you know, when we're babies, and we get gradually more and more adept at it as we keep being surrounded by those sources that we then kind of internalize. And then, you know, language sort of takes on a life of its own based on sort of set rules. I would argue I've never really seen a parrot go from being able to, you know, recite back some sort of catchphrase to just all of a sudden speaking in complete thoughts and sentences. But I don't know, maybe Pepperberg will prove me wrong there. But let's do start with Alex. It stands for a thing. It's an acronym, which we love here on Ridiculous History. Avian Language Experiment, or Avian Learning Experiment. Pepperberg decided to work with the gray, the African gray, not the Norwegian blue, which is dead already because of the Monty Python sketch. African gray, partly because they have an ability to kind of vocalize with a certain amount of clarity, quote unquote, again. And they are known for their abilities to quote unquote talk. So currently, yeah, these are actually also endangered birds, by the way, at the time. At this point, she had three of the endangered birds as subjects, one of which was Alex, the star of our show here. And this lovely Wired article from 2005 pulls a quote from Pepperberg saying, they don't have the same rock, Polly want a cracker type of vocalizations that some other parrots do. So they're a little bit more smooth operators, you know, a little bit more of like that radio voice when it comes to parrots.
Well, I wouldn't quite call them Quiet Storm, but let's play a clip so everybody can get a sense of this. We're just going to give you a little taste of Alex the Parrot, not Alex Williams, who composed our track. And Noel, Max, maybe we can react to this. First test would be, can you tell which voice is the human and which voice is the bird? That's an easy one. Second, would love to hear reactions. All right, here we go. This is from an experiment wherein Alex is commenting on objects that he is shown by his human friend.
Whoa,
that's right. How many?
Two.
That's right. You're a good boy. No, sweetie. No, you can't go back yet. You got to
some water. Ugh.
Nightmarish.
I'm just asking.
Go back. Ugh. It's like a demon.
So we will we'll end it there.
Yeah, thank you.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we hear Alex indicating a number of objects, right? How many? He responds two. And he keeps asking, or he keeps saying, I want to go back. Like he wants to, he's kind of bored, right? One could say if we're anthropomorphizing. And then what else does he do? He asks for water, which might just be him stalling. What are your thoughts? Noel, I can tell you're a little creeped out.
I want to go back to hell. Send me back to hell.
I mean, it's just, it's like backwards talk. It's the kind of thing you hear when you,
Black
when you,
Lodge,
you,
yeah,
play it. Exactly. It's like, yes, Black Lodge, Led Zeppelin, demonic masking kind of, I'm sorry. I'm really not joking here. That triggers me. That voice is terrifying. It's not cute. It's unnatural. And I know why. It makes sense that it's unnatural because it's not meant to form those types of syllables, those types of sounds. It feels unnatural.
Feels uncanny valley,
it,
huh?
It does to me. Yes, it does. It's like auto-tune, but not as sexy.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to pull some statements from a June 15th, 2022 article that Dr. Pepperberg herself wrote, where she says she recalls how she starts hanging out with Alex. She says that she was sitting across from Alex, gray parrot, and it's a year old, and he seems kind of nervous. And she says, we're in a really small room in this basement at the Department of Biological Sciences there at Purdue. And she said, I thought and I believe that parrots were smart, and I could use a training technique, which was revolutionary at the time, to change the way the world thought about a bird brain. And as Pepperberg recalls, a lot of people didn't take her seriously at this time. She even says a friend once jokingly said that her path was littered with the remains of those who said it couldn't be done.
Well, I've never thought that birds were stupid, okay? They freak me out. But I think that's actually because they're quite attuned to their surroundings, and their movements are very quick, and their response times are incredibly fast. So I think that's partly what's always freaked me out about them. But if you look at the way birds, like, migrate, they almost have, like, this ESP thing going on. The way the murmurings and all of that, like, where they, you know, move in these crazy arrays. I've never thought birds were stupid. And, you know, like, Ben, your fascination with corvids and their ability to kind of remember faces and, you know, seek out objects and give gifts and all that stuff. So, I mean, I'm leaning in a little bit to my terror surrounding this topic, but I really do truly think that birds, possibly one of the reasons I'm freaked out by them, is they possess some kind of otherworldly intelligence, quote unquote, or just sensory perception, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. You're not alone there. A lot of people, in fact, feel that way about children who also seem to have uncanny powers. Max is raising his hand. You know, not for nothing are creepy kids a mainstay of horror fiction. So this is weird because history hinges on such small things. Alex was picked out of random from a group of 10 gray parrots in a regular garden variety pet store. So it's quite possible that a civilian could have picked up Alex. And this entire experiment may have gone a different direction. Pepperberg starts out with volunteers, some undergraduates at Purdue, some high school volunteers, and what she calls some other faculty wives who were determined to help me make more of a place for myself at the university than they had managed. So this was crowdsourced. Everybody was interested, even if they didn't necessarily think there would be substantive science here. They thought, let's give it a go. And this went against a lot of established protocol. Pepperberg had to get the dean to agree to let her get a federal grant or submit one, despite the fact that she was not appointed to the faculty. And then she talks a little bit about her her predecessors, the folks who informed this work, folks like Dietmar Todt. That's Dietmar Todt, T-O-D-T, who published an article about how he had once trained a gray parrot to do a duet with him. And this was considered, in Pepperberg's mind, the first stage in two-way communication, which introduces the model/rival observational learning technique that she used with Alex the parrot.
You know what Toad means in German?
What does Toad mean in German?
Well, the T is a little bit of an anachronistic spelling, and I may be overthinking this, but it means dead. Like to yeah, if someone is told, then they have died, they have expired.
Doctor Dead.
Doctor Dead.
Nice.
It's kind of interesting. So Pepperberg essentially began to train Alex along with an assistant. They took on the roles of kind of, you know, presenting behavior for Alex to model. They would experiment with different numbers of objects and colors and things like that. And of course it was, you know, at this point kind of a conditioning or, you know, kind of situation where they would reward the bird with praise or treats or whatever, if the desired behavior was modeled correctly, which again, like, this is the earliest stages, right, of the training. So, or of the experiment. So whether it continues to be just rote memorization or training is kind of TBD at this point. But at this point, they're really just kind of starting to get their heads around, how do we train a parrot to, like, do human-like tasks?
Yeah, exactly. And this goes to the root of some of the criticism, as we'll see. So if Alex answers correctly and identifies this object or some aspect of it in a way the experimenters are hoping, then he gets praise. But here's the tricky thing. If he answers incorrectly, he gets scolded. That makes me wonder about, you know, Dr. Dead teaching his teaching his parrot the duet. Is he going, Gita, you naughty, naughty boy, that is an E flat.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
how does one scold a parrot?
You body shame them.
Wave a naughty finger at it. Just kind of like, that's a bad parrot.
What I like to do with my cats is I just hold up my thumbs and I'm like, this is why I'm in charge. Never forget. I am the keeper of the doorknob. I run the laser.
True. But, like, you know, I'm surprised that it was that they're talking about it was scolding instead of withholding, you know, right, of a treat or something. So I'm wondering, like, is it, I mean, it would, for it to even register to me with a creature like this, it would have to inflict some amount of pain or unpleasantness. You know, I just don't know. I want to know more about this scolding behavior.
Right, right. Negative v positive reinforcement. So this is part of some of the criticism you'll see, but just so we outline the process here, model rival aspects. Then after he answers correctly or incorrectly, the assistant and the trainer reverse their roles. This teaches, hopefully, that language is a two-way street, so that Alex should understand he can respond to questions when posed by any human, not just the trainer. They're hoping to break through the idea of a bird bonding with just one person, right? And it seems that this met with success. Alex began to understand the concept of two-way communication. And this is a funny part. You gotta love this, even if you don't love birds. Alex gets such a grasp on this that he starts interjecting. And if Pepperberg and her assistants make mistakes, he's the one who's like, orange or whatever. And I think that's really cool. But Pepperberg, being a scientist, also takes pains to note that, yes, Alex seemed to be extraordinarily intelligent in the worlds of parrots, but was not speaking language in the same way that humans do.
Not to mention, fabulous, all that is interesting article by Amy Lamoro that points out, actually has some really good video on it as well, if you want to check that one out, all that is interesting, points out that Pepperberg believed or concluded that Alex was actually able to comprehend some pretty abstract concepts, also recognize the specificity of questions, not just, you know, that classical conditioning kind of Pavlovian response kind of situation where you're essentially just training a creature to do a thing based on a stimuli, which is involuntary, you know, at that point, like the salivating, you know, for the ringing bell or whatever. This would be more like what they would have done with the Skinner box and like training, what is it, pigeons and such, Ben, or chickens to like peck a certain number to solve a math problem. A lot of those things we know were used as part of kind of huckstery sort of circus tricks, you know, to convince people that this was a intelligent chicken by literally training it to do a thing.
Yeah, behaviorism, right? Correct. Behavioralism.
But this parrot, Alex, seems to be a bit of cut above those examples, at least according to Pepperberg. There were some, you know, ability to comprehend some of these more abstract kind of niche subjects to the point where I believe she ascribed kind of a mental intelligence to the creature that would be somewhere in line with like a small child.
Yeah, like a two-year-old human, a dolphin, a chimpanzee, or the leaf blower guy who must get an alert on his phone whenever we're recording. So Alex does things that seem emotional, right? That seem as though he is frustrated. I want to point to a great article by Denitia Smith in the New York Times, 1999, A Thinking Bird or Just Another Bird Brain. It outlines some of the difficulties of objectively measuring the intelligence of something that you come to think of as an intelligent human child that happens to have wings, or it's on that level. So one of the telling things, this is in that All That's Interesting article, as well as the New York Times article, one of the telling things that it would do that it seems to exhibit emotional intelligence is he would play sometimes just for fun, the way that corvids, chimpanzees, and even elephants do in the wild, an octopus under the sea as well. He would also get frustrated or appear to get frustrated. If he was done with a test or if he was bored, he would say, "I'm sorry," or he would slam his cage door. He would throw stuff in frustration. He was a bit of a diva at times. And
well, yeah.
Yeah.
We heard on that clip that you played too, Ben, "I want to go back. Drag me back to hell." You know what? I was joking, but no, it is a moment where several times it's like, "I want to go back." And then the researcher says, "No, you can't go back. We've got to do more stuff." But I think the implication there is like, I'm bored of this shenaniganry, you know, put me back in my house.
Yeah.
I want to lap up water with my weird black tongue.
Hell for a bird, if it has a concept of hell, is probably being in a basement and being experimented on and not being able to fly free. And Pepperberg wanted to fly free with her research. Segway, she talks about how her first grant did get a response. The response was, "What are you smoking?" She did not get any money. And that is kind of a quote. That's from her earlier statement that we quoted. But she didn't give up. She sent a second grant in, and she got what she said was a tiny bit of money for a year just to see what she could accomplish. And she accomplished a lot. Let's go to Diana Rice, a psychologist at Hunter College, also works in animal cognition with dolphins and elephants in particular. And she calls this work revolutionary. But just like Pepperberg herself, other scientists in the field are cautioning against saying Alex's abilities are human. They say, look, the guy learned to communicate in basic expressions, but he didn't show logic and the ability to generalize that a two-year-old human child would. That's David Premack, Emeritus Professor of Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. He says there's no evidence of recursive logic. Without that, you can't work with digital numbers or more complex human grammar. And to be clear, Alex never did a TED Talk. You know what I mean? He wasn't ever out there like lecturing people or prosecuting a case in court.
But to your point earlier, Ben, I mean, this wasn't exactly the research gods were not exactly smiling upon this union, let us say, right? It was a very scrappy existence in order to keep funding, required moving around, you know, to various, you know, temp kind of positions and professorships or adjunct kind of things, you know. So this really was a labor of love and something that that Pepperberg was very passionate about. And it wasn't necessarily like, I mean, maybe the big picture, maybe this is someone that had vision and was like, okay, this is going to be worth it in 30 years. But for now, it's a very scrappy existence. Like, kept losing grant money. And then, you know, to your point, Ben, about what is she smoking, often just treated with scorn and bullied in certain ways by colleagues and contemporaries.
Yeah, but Alex was good at identifying stuff. His vocabulary was pretty creme de la creme, as parrot speech goes, but he was even better at identifying colors and objects and doing a little bit of math.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As we see in the Vintage News and also from Dr. Pepperberg herself, he could give a precise description when prompted about the shape, color, or material of a certain object. And he had an active memory. So after he learned the name of a certain object, key, coin, quesadilla, whatever, he would he would be able to identify that object, even if it were in different shapes or colors. So one example, like going back to keys, he would see different types of keys. You know what I mean? Like think of the old idea.
Kids' toys, kind of like little plasticky, oversized colored keys that you might give to a toddler on a ring to practice fine motor skills or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, think of Platonic ideals, right? Like when you hear the word chair, you think of many different versions of a chair, but you could always identify it as a chair. That's a human thing, people thought. And Alex appears to have that ability himself. And he did something massive. He was in front of a mirror and he recognized himself and he learned what color his plumage was. He learned he was gray. They told him, you know, that's you, buddy. That's you. That's what you look like. He is one of the very, very few animals that has posed a question about itself, its appearance, its existence, you know, in this sort of manner. This is monumental. You know, self-awareness is a huge thing. And honestly, a lot of humans haven't cracked it. You know what I mean? It's a glass house situation.
That's right. And even like a concept like infinity, you know, or zero, for example, those are kind of abstract concepts. Like, you know, we can look at things that are there and say there are like five things there or whatever, but to be presented with nothing and quantify it as something. That requires some metacognition, like we like to talk about, you know, thinking about thinking. Because what do you mean? There's nothing there. What do you call that? Well, it's zero. But also the difference between zero and infinity are more related than one might think. So at this point, Alex can identify 50 different objects. He knows colors. He knows shapes. He understands some of those higher level metacognitive concepts. Pepperberg calls a zero-like concept, right? Pepperberg has never in her career heard of a bird being able to wrap their, you know, bird brains around it. I'm not saying bird brains is a pejorative here. I'm just saying it is the brain of a bird. Back in 2004, she was working on a number comprehension study. Alex could look at a tray of green and blue balls and blocks and then tell Pepperberg how many of the objects were not only blue, but were blue blocks. This is combining, you know, shape and color in a way that's seemingly not just that rote memorization.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she did something pretty impressive. After they went back and forth on this trial of counting and then also categorizing by color, she said he might be giving some wrong answers because he keeps interrupting to ask for grapes or bananas or toys. He might just be bored. So she did this. She flipped the script a little bit and she said, okay, smarty, what color 5? And when she asked this, it was a trick question. She knew there were not 5 objects of the same color on the tray. And he said, none. He didn't come up with this word on his own. Pepperberg says he knew it in that sense of absence we discussed earlier because he'd been involved in studies on determining differences and similarities between objects. But the use of none in this case is novel and unique. And this speaks directly to criticisms people have where they say, look, did the bird really recognize himself in the mirror? Or did he just happen to coincidentally just squawk some stuff that seemed relevant and pertinent at the time? So Pepperberg knows she's onto something. She starts mixing in, this is going back to the Wired article, she starts mixing in questions where the answer would have to be none, and she gets similar results. This gets published in the Journal of Comparative Psychology in May 2005, and this is not even getting to the super fascinating part yet. So we said Alex is a luminary, you know? He is a Nikola Tesla amongst the world of parrots. So you got to get another parrot, right? If you want to do some real science.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go. So she gets this other gray parrot. This parrot's name is Griffin, and she wants to see if Griffin can associate sound sequences with quantities. So, as every human listener knows, I just clicked my fingers 3 times, right? Click, click, click. So, Pepperbird does something similar. She plays 2 clicks, and she's hoping Griffin will come in and say, like, true. But he doesn't say a thing. The guy's stone-faced. He's totally icing her. And then she does 2 more clicks, and Alex, who is in the same room, just pops off, and he's like, 4. And then she does 2 more clicks, and he goes, 6. And then she says she looked at him and said, you want to do an addition? You know, you want to do some math? Fine.
Now, isn't this kind of what was happening with that horse situation with Clever Hans, the horse? There were like clippity-clops he would answer. I mean, obviously horses can't talk, so the only way Hans could respond to these math problems is to clop his little horse hoof. But a big part of the demonstration of that horse was simple mathematics.
Yeah, yeah. And in that case, Hans, God love him, is responding to most likely unconscious cues from his human buddy, right? And that's a big question here. Knowing that parrots do have a range of cognitive skills, is Alex simply watching, listening for cues and slotting in what feels like a correct response without really understanding that 4 + 2 = 6? These are good questions. Alex learned, per Pepperberg, to correctly put the numbers 1 through 8 in order using multicolored refrigerator magnets. And then she says he, on his own, learned to equate those symbols with the appropriate number of objects. So think of 3 things, right? And then think of the number 3. And everybody using non-Roman numerals is probably using Arabic, right? That's mm-hmm. where modern number symbols come from, numerical symbols. So Alex was able to look at just 3 regular things, whether they're keys, coins, slices of quesadilla, sorry, last time, promise, and then immediately equate that. Thank you. Immediately equate that with the written symbol 3. That's pretty impressive. You know, if we put the critics to one side.
And, you know, this is obviously a very ambitious long-term study. September 6th, 2007, Alex and Pepperberg looked their last looks and squawked their last squawks at each other. She says that they went through their good night ritual, which I assume involved a kiss on the cheek. A little tuck in, perhaps.
You're thinking of the dolphin LSD experiment.
This is
a family show.
Yeah, that's right. It is a family show. Look that one up if you want to get on a list of some kind. It's a thing. She said that these rituals would vary slightly. And this time she told him it was time to go into the cage, and the bird said, "You be good.
You'll be good. I love you."
It actually sounded less creepy than than your impression. But
do we have a clip of this?
Let's see.
Not the final squawk, surely. This is the tender moment between friends.
Yep, we have it.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's hear it. I'll try my impression again real quick, and we'll see what it actually sounds like.
"You'll be good. I love you."
All right, so we're going to play a clip here of one of their nightly routines.
And he and Irene continued their nightly routine.
"I love you.
I love you too.
You'll be good.
I'm trying.
Going dinner.
I'll see you tomorrow."
So that's an example of their good night routine, which seems oddly wholesome. You know, it's kind of Pixar.
It is. And honestly, at this point too, I feel like the bird's voice is a little less shaky and creepy sounding than it was when it started. You know, I think it's gotten better at intoning and then kind of mimicking a little bit more of an, I'm sorry, look, all you bird lovers out there who are cursing my name, I get it.
I hope not, but I didn't mean to
make it sound like the Exorcist voice or anything. That was very wholesome, Ben. And Pixar, like, you're right. So a year after the 30 years in question that was supposed to be the 10 year of this study, Alex was gone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
so why wasn't that enough time to fully understand, you know, whether this stuff is real or not? Because it still seems like the jury's kind of out, Ben.
Well, it's partially due to competing opinions about animal cognition, and also one criticism people will levy. This is not us. This is criticism that gets brought up in the scientific community. They'll say, hey, this one person and their team spent 3 decades with this one instance of the gray parrot, right? And so maybe they started putting out signals that they were not aware of. They certainly emotionally bonded. Pepperberg says that she was devastated when Alex passed away, unfortunately, about 15 years younger than most parrots in captivity. But what this teaches us, this amazing story, whether you hate birds or you love them and wish you could turn into a bird, wherever you are in the spectrum, what this shows us is that there is still a lot to be learned about the living world and about the other animals that we are so fortunate to spend time with today. I would say personally, I don't have the emotional space to have a parrot roommate. You know what I mean? I would like it to be more of an indoor-outdoor cat. But we also know that in ancient native communities, people were well aware of these tendencies. They also befriended these animals and respected their intelligence. And there's still so much to learn. The more we learn about the intelligence of other non-human animals, the more humans learn about themselves, which is quite a beautiful thing.
Agreed. So huge thanks to Research Associate Zachary, Dr. Zach Williams, for finding this topic and giving us something to chew on, like a weird hooked beaked winged creature might chew on a stick of seeds, you know? Mm-hmm. That's a thing they seem to like.
And huge preemptive, proactive thanks to all our fellow Ridiculous Historians who will be visiting the Ridiculous Historians Facebook page. Post your favorite funny, wholesome, or creepy examples of avian intelligence. We love to see them. Big thanks to Mr. Max Williams, first of his name. Big thanks, of course, as always, to our favorite parrot, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister. Who else? Big thanks to Yves Jeffcoat, Chris Rossi Otis. Big thanks to you, Noel.
No, man. Caw, right back at you. And Max, thanks to you for all your gentle and approving faces you've been making. I really felt seen on this one.
Be good. We'll see you tomorrow.
Until next time.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.